You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Did you know that Podcast Juice is premium content? Well, check out Podcast Juice All Access. Join today and get instant access to over 9 years of great classic podcasts, members-only shows, and more exclusive content. Go to PodcastJuice.net/All Access and join today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Wrestling Rundown. I am your co-host, that's right, Ampu, better known as Anthony Kennedy. And I am joined by the ever-present Big Sexy and Seth. How's it going, homie?
It is going well. It has been too far or too long since we've done this, and I have to shoulder the blame because of my scheduling conflicts. But now, let's get into the squared circle.
I'm going to go ahead and let him do that too, because, if I don't have to take fault, I won't take fault. Nah, it's all good. It's all good. You know, you're doing big things, and we can be more proud of you. So this is the PodcastJuice.net's wrestling show. Me and Big Sexy, we're huge wrestling fans, going back to the 80s, back to WWF with Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. Big Sexy, probably even further than that, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I go back to the early 70s. When I was a kid, I used to watch big-time wrestling San Francisco area, Roy Shires with Pat Patterson, Rocky Johnson, Peter Marvilla. And then I used to watch the LaBelle promotion from L.A. with Chavo Guerrero and Roddy Piper before Piper went to Mid-Atlantic in Georgia and WWF. I knew about him back in L.A., so I was ahead of the curve there. And then as we got cable, we started to get in different territories. I used to watch Southwest Championship Wrestling, which was Joe Blanchard. Amarillo, which was the Funk's territory. Then we started getting, in the late 70s, we got the monthly WWF show from Madison Square Garden on our system. And then we got in TBS, which meant, NWA, and I started watching Memphis. I saw a lot of different territories before WWE fucked it all up in 1985.
Now, please forgive me. I had the handicap of not being born yet.
So. Well, you were just a puppy, so you know.
I started with the WWF, the Hulk Hogan, and all of that, and I was able to tune into KDOC, Channel 56, UHF station in Los Angeles. And here's a question I got to understand, because I'm hearing you and Mike in Seattle, Q-Storm out in Indianapolis.
Q's in Philly. Q's in Philly.
Well, I mean, but he started.
He started in Indianapolis, yeah.
And I know Sean was in Georgia. He never really spoke up on it. But how prevalent was cable in those parts of the world, in the nation? Because I know I lived in South Central LA, the hood, for lack of a better term, but we didn't get all the access that you got. I mean, I had Z Channel, I had On TV, and then Select TV, and then finally in 1989, cable as we know it came. I think it was Continental Cablevision was the first cable we had. Was it that easy and accessible to you guys?
Well, yes and no, because on my cable system, and I'm going way back into the mid to late 70s, we were on Focus Cable, then it became Cable Oakland, and it was funny because when it became Cable Oakland, we lost HBO, we picked up Showtime, which pissed me off, and my friends in the suburbs had TBS on their system long before I got it on my system. So I was at a party one day, and I see TBS, and I see when Arn Anderson makes his debut, as Arn Anderson with Ole before they became a Wrecking Crew, he was still, I don't want to say jobbing out, but he was still working his way up the ladder.
That's right.
And I'm like, whoa, this is cool. And this is before Tony Schiavone and Crockett took over the show. This was back in the Gordon Solie days. And so I'd see that, and I'd come back in Oakland. I'm like, why don't we get this? And I was just livid. And then it was in late 84, they announced that they're going to get TBS on our lineup. And I flipping channels one day at 3:05 Saturday afternoon. I go to 247 and there is Magnum TA. I'm like, what is this? And that was it. So now for Georgia, I know TBS was it was the first superstation. So I'd be surprised if they didn't get it in Georgia. Indianapolis and Seattle, I don't know. I don't know.
So real quick, this has been a monumental week in professional wrestling. First, we had the Survivor Series pay-per-view from the WWE. Big Sexy, were you able to partake in that show?
You know, I watched it on the network, and to be completely candid, I only watched it for one reason. You know, we all watch it for the same reason. We went to see Sting, and Sting made his debut. I was kind of disappointed because, you know, I'm older than you, and I don't like the Crow Sting gimmick at all. I just
I don't.
The original buzz cut, you know, colorful, loud Sting. You know, but at the same time, I was talking to someone about this at the comic shop. I can see why they would want the Crow Sting because he's more of an anti-hero, right, and that's what they want nowadays. I'm like, all right, I can see that. I can see that. But, you know, I still miss, you know, the Stinger splash, the buzz cut, you know, the screaming like a maniac, beating on his chest. I miss that.
Dude, I'm sorry. The Surfer Sting had run his course by 96. Even Sting was sick of that gimmick as he just started letting his hair grow out. He was like, "Look, I'm not doing all that. The buzz cut with the low with the fade. Nah, we're done with that."
Yeah.
So, I don't miss this. I don't miss Surfer Sting. I don't miss. It's good to go back on the WWE Network and to see some of those matches against Cactus Jack, against Flair, him coming up to become this quote-unquote icon. But the Crow Sting, that's the one. That, I mean, and on top of that, because he's of an advanced age and it's very clear he's not doing what is necessary to be the Surfer Sting. He has this, the onesie on. I'm going to call it the onesie. And the trench coat. I'm glad about that. The only thing that I had two gripes with that. One, where was the bat? Where was the bat? That's since 97, that bat has been a part of his character, and for him not to come out with it or pulled it out and utilized it, I was like, okay.
I can tell you where the bat is. Think about this. Assuming, and again, the same friend I spoke to about this at the comic shop, assuming they build this up to Triple H Sting at WrestleMania, at some point, Triple H will bring out that sledgehammer. That's where we'll see the bat.
That will be a huge markup. I guess you don't want to give everything at once.
You don't want to hotshot this one. No, you want to let this build up as much as you can in this current climate, which they don't let build up anymore, but we will see.
And number two, I thought that the stare down between him and Triple H would just linger just a little too long. I guess they were trying to milk it. They were trying to get that Hogan Rock.
Yeah.
If you remember from 2002, yeah, where the crowd supposedly got electric and they just couldn't wait to see them go at it. But unfortunately, it just didn't work. Maybe Sting isn't to that level, or maybe it's just disenchantment with Triple H that, you know, of all the guys people want to see Sting go up against, my opinion, it ain't Triple H. People want Undertaker and Rock, maybe Cena.
You know, I doubt it'll be Taker because he hasn't worked. I mean, he's only working once a year, and they jobbed him out last WrestleMania, and I don't know. I would be surprised at that. And if they did do that, who's going to be the heel? You know, they're not going to bring Sting in just to heel him out like that.
You know, that I think everybody wants it, but do you really want it? Because that's an excellent point of somebody has to be the bad guy. And Sting's first match at Mania, nobody wants to boo either guy. But I think it can be something that can be pulled off where they respect each other, similar to Shawn Michaels' Undertaker. I think maybe the second one. The first one, Shawn, I feel, played the subtle heel, if not full-on heel, for that match. But the second one, it really was, okay, here's the good guy who's obsessed with beating the Undertaker at WrestleMania versus the legendary phenom who has to maintain his winning streak at WrestleMania. So it could be possible, but that actually is a good point because nobody's going to want to boo either guy.
Exactly. And people are sick of Triple H, you know, and he gets over better as a heel because as a face, you know, it's not like the hatred they have for Cena. It's more visceral with Triple H. He's just not a good face unless he's got Shawn Michaels with him, you know, doing the DX thing.
Exactly. But other things that happened on that card, which was pretty crappy, to say the least, we had The Miz down. The Miz and Damian Mizdow winning the tag team titles. Do you think that was long overdue, considering the act has been pretty hot for the past 2 months? Or right now was the right time to pull the trigger on them being the champions?
You know, it's funny because in the Federation, or WWE now, they still pay such short attention to the tag team. I thought the Usos were good, but they've had the straps for a while. I don't think, Stardust had it long enough. And, you know, I'm not a fan of Miz. I like his work. I mean, I admire how the guy went from knucklehead reality star and put in the work to get where he is in this business. But, you know, him having a glorified flunky and Sandow, yeah, I hope it won't last too long. But at the same time, if they're going to use the titles to get them both over, so be it.
Me personally, I wish they had never taken the belts off of Goldust and Cody Rhodes. But, hey, as long as Goldust still has a job, I'm okay with that. Another one, which to me was the worst match of the night. It was Team Fox, Alicia Fox, and Naomi Natalya versus Team Paige, which is Paige, Cameron, and Layla and Summer Rae. Five minutes into this match, I was like, this damn match is going on way too long. No disrespect, most of them are very attractive to look at, nice eye candy, but some of y'all ain't got no business in the damn ring.
Nope.
And the fact that they gave them 14 minutes, I remember back in the 87 Survivor Series with those women and the 95 Survivor Series with our full Japanese team of women. I don't think they got that much time.
You know, other than my girl, Beth Phoenix, who was no longer in the company, most of the women can't work. I mean, your girl, AJ, can work a little bit. And Natalya can work, because she grew up in this.
Right, right.
But the rest of those people in the tag match, come on, man. Get them out of here. I mean, if they're going to do it, do it. So they need to go to Japan. They need to hire Miss Medusa Michelli to help train these women and let them, you know, learn the craft. I saw this one woman. I forgot where I saw it on Facebook. There's this one independent wrestler. They're saying they need to get her because this chick is attractive and can work. And that's something that they're missing now.
Now, the thing is that in NXT, their developmental system, they actually have some really good wrestlers with, I believe her name is Bayley and Charlotte. They're really good. But, you know, it's with Vince and the writers and creative. And actually, Vince and Kevin Dunn thing should be on the main roster. And talented can work a match is not the top priority. It's how good you look and how can we market you. But yeah, sorry about that. But what I was saying is, if it's the case that these are just marketing toys to show that you're empowering women in your company, as well as to find outside ventures like the Total Divas, like magazines, then do not give these clearly incapable of having a match, possibly dangerous women, 10 to 15 minutes. No. Yes.
It just exposes their shortcomings. That's all it does.
Not only exposes their shortcomings, but can actually get somebody hurt, because as you can recall, I think it was last November, I believe, where Caitlyn dropped a knee in Naomi's eye socket, breaking.
Oh, shit!
Yeah, it was
supposed to be. I wasn't right with that. Oh, man.
Yes. I have no idea why, decided, hey, this would be a great counter to a sunset flip. You drop a knee to her face. Unfortunately, when you have these unskilled feet, I'm sorry, I don't want to say females, but in these cases, they are female.
Wow.
These unskilled female wrestlers, they're going to miss. And she missed and broke her eye socket.
Oh, man.
I don't mean to laugh, but it's just you can't help but laugh. And why would you let that spot be called?
And I do love me some Caitlyn, though, but damn, baby.
Yes.
Oof.
She messed that up. After that, we got Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose, which I'm a little. The match was good. The post match beatdown of Bray Wyatt was good, but I'm really just not feeling this feud that much. You would think that they could talk me into caring about this match, but really, I want to see Dean Ambrose as the top or near the top babyface. I think he has it more than Roman Reigns. Bray Wyatt, I want to see him as the top or near the top heel in the company. I think he almost has it, but for some reason he kind of bores me just a tad bit doing his wrestling matches, but them together at this point in time when they should be facing people above them that can elevate them, I don't think that it's working for them.
You know, I think that as much as I like Roman Reigns, the guy can't talk. He needs to go back to being a heel with a mouthpiece. Now, if anyone should be a Paul Heyman guy, it's Roman Reigns.
You know what? I could kind of see that. I really can see it. That actually wouldn't be bad. But the thing is that it appears that management, Vince McMahon in particular, feels that he's the next big guy. So they're going to make it work, goddammit.
Yeah, they're going to shove it down our throats. And, you know, again, it'll just hurt him as a worker down the line.
I agree. I look at it as, I want to say, I think he has the potential to be Dave Bautista. But you have to put him, which is not bad. He was a good worker. He finally found his right voice and his right personality. And by the end, he was great and was on the cusp of being a real money-making, drawing heel. And I don't know if he can work as a heel or a babyface, which is his best, but you need to give him time to figure out, to get his personality, learn how to work, and learn how to be able to put that personality to draw money. And I think they're doing him a disservice rushing him, especially when you have the CM Punk departure and you still have the lingering backlash with Daniel Bryan. And now, not to mention, people still boo John Cena. So now you're going to come with Roman Reigns, who, you know, they still haven't totally embraced, and it could just, in the long run, could backfire and not be good for him.
You know, I think there's a bit of a, I don't say conundrum, but I don't know what they're going to do when Danielson comes back. You know, what do they do with this guy? I mean, he needs to go back to the top of the ladder, but something CM Punk said in his interview, which we'll get to in a moment, could actually be something we're seeing live in person, because essentially, if you're not Triple H's buddy, you don't get that shot.
I wouldn't say don't just put it all on Triple H, but
well, you know, Vince likes a certain look. Exactly, we all know this.
Exactly. My thing is Daniel Bryan was not their choice. They reluctantly went with him. And then he did the absolute worst thing he could have ever did in life. He got hurt. So now it's like, you weren't our pick. We put the belt on you, and then you were gone the rest of the year. He's going to have to sell a ton of T-shirts, move huge quarter hours for him, in my opinion, to ever get a sniff of that title in the main event again.
See, that's the problem that they're going to have, because eventually they're going to have to get the belt off of Brock. And as much as I like Daniel, I don't see him jobbing, you know, making Brock tap. Sorry.
Oh, that's not going to do that. You know, I don't see Brock tapping, period. Just his ego. And we'll get into some Brock news, too. Hold off on that. Then we had Adam Rose and the Bunny defeating
Heath please Slater. Kill that Bunny and kill Adam Rose. Fuck, I'm tired of him. All the new talent they're bringing in, him and the Bo Leave guy, kill them both. Get them out of here. Fire them. I can't stand them.
Yeah, so I guess that there's nothing more I can add to that. Then we got, which I thought was a pretty interesting angle, although it was a swerve out of nowhere, Nikki Bella beating AJ Lee in 35 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Now, if you've been paying attention, back at WrestleMania, I believe 28, Daniel Bryan, was it 28? No. Yeah, 28. Daniel Bryan was set to defend the World Heavyweight title to Sheamus. Most people knew that Sheamus was their guy and he was going to do the job. Daniel Bryan was going to do the job to him for the world title. And they were fine. They accepted it. But they thought at least their guy, Daniel Bryan, was going to be able to shine on the big stage before he lost his title. Nope. They decided that. Couldn't do it. Nope. They decided that. They wanted to break the WrestleMania record for the quickest title change ever and have AJ, quote-unquote, distract Daniel Bryan with the kiss, and he walks into a bro kick from Sheamus and gets beat. So they decided to do a George Lucas and make it symmetry. You like that. You know, you like that, right, Big Sexy?
I do like that. I do like that.
And decided, hey, shouldn't the same thing happen to AJ Lee? And, Nikki, Brie Bella, now Daniel Bryan's wife, should be the one kissing AJ. This would be great. I liked it. I'm sorry. I thought that that was very poetic. It made you think. I'm glad the announcers, they're not JR, but they were good at calling out. Like, hey, that's how Daniel Bryan lost, Nick Bree's husband lost the world title back at WrestleMania. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Well,
what about you?
You know, now I must, you know, be in all candor here. The Bella Twins can do one thing for me. Well, two things for me. One we don't talk about. The one thing for me they can do is when they come out to the ring, when they do that little shimmy shake, mm-hmm. I'm good. Anything else that happens after that, whatever. And isn't one married to Daniel Bryan, the other one is dating John Cena?
That's right. Nikki, the we'll say the larger of the two. And yes. That's not a crack on her.
No,
she is physically more endowed than her twin sister. Think about
and
that.
And juicy!
But see, the thing is that it's funny because the next night, AJ Lee was making a comment to the Bella Twins, telling them that, oh, talent isn't sexually transmitted. And I'm going to have to disagree. One, AJ, you've significantly improved since being CM Punk's boo thing, now wife. So, come on. Clearly somebody wrote that line to make you look bad. Two, ever since both of them have been dating those wrestlers, they've gotten better. I'm not going to even lie. The Bella Twins have gotten better. I'm not saying they're Trish Stratus, Lita,
no.
In their primes. No, but they've gotten better. So, it might be possible.
You know, again, when they come out to the top of the ramp and do that little booty shake, I'm like, huh?
Exactly.
Okay. I'm like, everything else, I'm good.
And lastly, we had Team Cena, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Big Show, Eric Rowan, and Ryback, which is probably one of the worst Survivor Series teams in history.
I'm sick of Ryback. I thought I'd never say that, but I'm sick of him.
Well, we'll be able to talk about him as well. Versus
big clumsy bastard
defeating Team Authority, Seth Rollins, Kane, Mark Henry, Rusev, and Luke Harper, which honestly ain't much better than Team Cena. Now, I want to be honest, they had the heat. People cared about this match. People were shocked when John Cena got eliminated, which, you know, there's the bad side to that, which was being Big Show turning heel and knocking out John Cena. And it actually let two of the young guys, Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins, finish the match. Although I have a little issues with how it did finish. But there was a lot of good things that was done in this match. Plus, we had the debut of Sting. Big Sexy, what say you?
You know, I enjoyed everything up to the point when Cena got eliminated. I'm like, okay, good. You know, I'm the only one who's going to think this, but I thought that Randy Orton was going to make a run-in. I really did.
Everybody did.
Didn't happen. The show turn came out of nowhere. I like that they gave Dolph and Seth some time to work, because I like Seth now that he's sold. He's finally starting to get over now. Finally. And, you know, Dolph, other than damn near killing Jerry Lawler because he's clumsy, other than that, I like his work.
I have to correct you. He didn't damn near kill Jerry Lawler. He clinically did kill Jerry
Lawler. I stand corrected. That guy. And I remember the night where he took the title off of Alberto Del Rio, when he cashed in his money in the bank. That was a hot crowd. And a major.
Yes, it was.
Now, having said that, you know, the teams just weren't good. Now, as much as I don't like Rusev, I mean, I think his gimmick is stale, but I do like his manager.
Yes.
Oh, woo! The blonde with the booty? Yes. The Russian? We can figure it out.
Now, to be fair, I think Rusev has improved a lot. And I feel like they've kind of stalled his push as a tad bit. I know they put the U.S. title on him, but he just doesn't
bullshit.
Seem as hot.
No.
He doesn't seem as hot as he was when he was going against Jack Swagger, which, you know, they didn't have a lot of plans for Jack Swagger, and pushed him out of the program and out down the card after his SummerSlam match. But that kind of speaks to you that, hey, Swagger had a lot to do with that program as much as Rusev and the Russian gimmick.
Yeah. excuse me, banana.
I hope it's not, it's not in a tailpipe.
No, it's not in a banana tailpipe. I agree, but at the same time, Rusev is so limited because Swagger is a former world champion. I don't like how they jobbed him out to this guy coming up the ladder. I understand you want to feed Rusev and get him over and all that, but I don't think he warranted the push against Swagger, Show, and Henry. I just don't. Now they're building him up, and now they're cooling him back a bit, but there's no way he could really challenge for the title because Lesnar would just wipe him out. Cena won't job to him. You know, hopefully they'll feed him to Ryback, and we'll have one god-awful match, and they'll both get pushed back down the card.
I think that it would be in their best interest to keep him hot, keep going with it, and a lot of people are speculating there's going to be a confrontation with Hulk Hogan, or, and people has their fingers crossed, Kurt Angle.
Is Angle leaving TNA?
Well, he doesn't have a contract at the moment. He does not have a contract at the moment.
Now, Kurt Angle, yes. Hogan's too old. No, he'll kill himself.
But there's reports that Kurt Angle won't happen for two reasons. One, Triple H and him, they didn't have the best of relationships. But I don't think it's as bad as Triple H and Jericho, and definitely not Triple H and Punk. And two, Vince McMahon has been, apparently, this has been reported, has gone on record that he cannot have an Olympic gold medalist die on his watch in his company. Oh, and God. They felt that's how bad he was when he left back in 2006. And on top of that, they don't believe that he can pass their physical.
Now, that would be something I'd like to see. Now, I mean, I know Kurt had some pharmaceutical issues.
Yes, indeed. But,
I mean, assuming that is no longer the case, he can pass any physical they put in front of him. He's the most in-shape wrestler since Bob Backlund. So I don't buy that.
Well, I mean, remember, he's had the neck problem.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
The knee problems. And, you know, he didn't slow down when he went to TNA. The knock on TNA is that you go there to take a vacation. Well, Kurt Angle, he didn't. He went hard, and they say he probably accumulated a few more injuries. But my only other issue with the match was, and I thought that it would have been totally perfect, is if once Sting made his debut, if Rollins had got to his feet and tried to rush at Dolph to win the match, maybe miss, and he hit the zigzag. I just didn't like the fact of Sting pulling Rollins off of Ziggler and pulling Ziggler on top of Rollins for the win. I just felt like, you know, let him hit a move and get that win.
Yeah, let him earn it. Yeah.
But I'm not going to lie. I didn't see the Sting thing coming. I didn't think that he would have any impact in the main event. Like you, I believed it was going to be Randy Orton. So when that crow sound effect hit and I realized it was Sting, I'm not going to lie. I marked out a tad bit.
No, I marked out. I won't lie. I did too.
I sat there like, what? Wait, what? Sting? Because, you know, at that point, I'm like, wow, okay. Because I had heard the rumors that Sting was there and Sting was going to make an appearance.
Heard those rumors. I didn't know that.
So when the main event came and he ain't made his appearance, I was like, okay, I guess plans change. And when that music hit, I was like, oh, what? And you know, I was excited for that.
Now, the question is, how do they follow up with that? Because, you know, the Sting, when he's the crow, he don't talk. So let's see what he asked, you know, what they're going to do.
Well, the thing is that, and that was kind of the knock on Sting back in WCW days, is he wasn't a very good talker. But
no.
He got very good in TNA. They might be able to write something for him that could be really good. So that was the Survivor Series recap. The next night on Raw, we find out it's official, the Authority is gone. Daniel Bryan came back, it was GM for a day. And at the end, they brought back the anonymous Raw GM.
That's right, the laptop.
Now, to me, I found hilarious is, it's like out of nowhere, the sound goes off, the iPhone text goes off, which states an email from the anonymous Raw GM.
Come on, there it is.
And Michael Cole and JBL and Jerry Lawler are like, oh my God, what's going on? And then you look over and there's the podium. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? That thing's been there all this time? And you're like, what's going on? I thought that was so bad. But other than that, and I was just like, please tell me that's just a one-time only thing. I don't want the return of the anonymous Raw GM.
You know, because that leads to Michael Cole being more involved than I want him to be, and I don't like that.
Agreed.
I don't like him trying to be a talent, and he shouldn't be anywhere near the ring, ever.
Agreed. Well, we'll find out how things goes tomorrow night. Well, we have some other news to get to. One being, and there was some people were very worried in and out of the wrestling business if TNA was going to be done, as Spike had announced that they were not going to be renewing their contract with TNA. They were going to give them to the end of the year just to keep their momentum going so they can find a new station. And apparently they have. They found one with Destination America. No terms as far as how much they're going to be paid or when the time slot is. But TNA is still in business for now.
For now?
You think it's a good thing? Well, overall, it's a good thing, as there's another place for people to go, for wrestlers to go earn some money. But if they're not going to get any further, if they're not going to grow, is this really a good thing that they found this television station to keep running their show on?
Well, I think the problem with TNA is really systemic. I thought I'd never say that in a real sentence either. But it is, because I don't know who was calling the shots, but anytime they got Vince Russo, even on the fringe of being involved, there's a problem. He should not be there. He's a poison. He's cancer. Get him out. Dixie Carter has fallen in love with herself. She don't need to be on there either. I know they're trying to get Paul E to take the reins at one time, and that fell through. They need, and again, I'm older than you. I think they need someone like Jim Cornette to come in, or Paul E, or Dutch Mantel, a wrestling person, and give that one person the power over the show. That's it. This crash TV nonsense, no, it just does not work. So that's why, and honestly, I haven't watched TNA in a while. They've got some talent there, but they're just not using it properly. And the announcers stink, too. Oh, the announcer's terrible. Bumrash is god-awful.
Well, now they have Mike Tenay and Taz, which, I'm sorry, I actually prefer Don West over Taz.
That's saying something, because Don West is terrible.
Taz hasn't cared in God knows how long, and so, to me, Don West was perfect for TNA, and I actually got to enjoy his commentary, so I thought that was a downgrade. For me, like I said, I'm glad that there's still an alternative wrestling product. Eventually, I might watch it again, but I just haven't cared about TNA in well over a year. I just keep up to know what's going on, who title changes. It's just something worth watching. But hopefully, this is humbling for them, and they decide to put together a good product that can grow and be a strong alternative wrestling presence.
You know, I hope so, because with that, and I keep seeing commercials for this, like, underground lucha show, which I don't care about because I like the lucha style. But, you know, with that, as long as the boys have other places to work, that's all that can only help the business.
Exactly. And then we got some very shocking news, which surprised even some of the best wrestling reporters. New Japan Pro Wrestling actually has a U.S. television deal in place with AXS Television Network, which should be on DirecTV, which I am all excited for. This was one of the most shocking news stories of the past 2 weeks. That, well, one, that they're going to be on U.S. network television, and two, they got a television deal before TNA was able to close theirs.
Well, they've got a better product than TNA. Yeah, I said it. Now, the only thing that, now that we're talking about this, the only thing that pops into my head is hopefully, the AXS people won't get a couple of morons to dub in English commentary. Oh, that would suck.
Well, they're going to dub in English commentary.
I mean, they can dub it in, but get someone who's knowledgeable.
They're going with Mauro Ranallo, who's actually a boxing play-by-play.
Okay,
and he's a wrestling fan. He did on what was called the Fight Network in Canada. He did English dub for Pro Wrestling Noah, which is another Japanese company. So you got somebody that's knowledgeable and is going to really give it down. And they have Josh Barnett, former UFC heavyweight champion. And he's actually wrestled in New Japan. And I'm presuming he's a wrestling fan, so he's going to care enough besides the paycheck to do a good job for New Japan
in
the U.S.
Okay, well, that could be good then. All right, I'll leave it alone. Because I remember, I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of these commercial DVDs that are out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
with people over with their own dubbing, and it's just like, dude, you don't need to be here.
There was one guy during the G1 Climax, I don't know if you saw all the matches. One guy, he actually overdubbed his own English commentary, which, you know, it was nice to have that English commentary to bring that history and background and backstory to a match. But it was like, you know, that's why there's only one Jim Ross.
That's right. That's right.
Nice effort. Appreciate it, but yeah, you didn't have it. Now, what's also interesting about this TV network deal is the fact that, and don't get mad, Big Sexy, apparently it's a 13-week, I'm going to say it's a trial contract, but it's going to be 13-week episode show, and it's going to be from matches from starting at the January 4th, 2013 show, which everybody's looking like, yeah, what?
Well, no, that makes sense because you want to familiarize this country with your stars. So I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that because you may have seen this stuff, but the majority of people here, myself included, we haven't seen this stuff other than like a YouTube clip here and there. So if that will introduce people to this product, so we'll know who people are, and then when they go live after the 13 weeks, yeah.
But 2013, yeah. I mean, there's so, I don't understand why did they do from 2014, considering that they do have a U.S. pay-per-view happening on January 4th, and we'll get more into that in a minute. But 2014, I'm like, why are you going back to 2013? Yes, it was a good year, but 2014, give us something more recent that, you know, it's not that jarring, because from 2013 to 2014 were two different, completely different years for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Whole other different champions, but hey, I can't do too much complaining, as I'm going to be able to see New Japan in crystal HD on my television in 2014.
And they're going to cut into some market share, believe that.
The other thing is, they actually, we're waiting on an announcement, but apparently New Japan was supposed to be announcing a streaming service as well, which equivalent to the WWE Network, which, sorry WWE, I American pride and everything, but but if New Japan, with that extensive library of great match, I'm sorry, their tape library, even though it might be from 1972 to 2014, which probably might be, I want to say 50,000 hours less than what WWE has in their vault, still the greatest collection of wrestling, period. Well, maybe all Japan. Maybe.
You know, if they put up their library, I'm on this.
Yes, I'm not
missing this.
I will be canceling my WWE Network subscription and will be subscribing to New Japan if it's available worldwide. But as I alluded to earlier, New Japan's annual Tokyo Dome show, which will be Wrestle Kingdom 9, will be airing in the U.S. on pay-per-view.
On what carrier?
All of them, apparently.
Really?
And they, who do you think they got to be the ringside announcer in Tokyo?
Oh, no. Who?
Jim Ross.
No!
Yes.
Oh, I'm watching this. I'm looking this up right now.
Yes.
Whoa.
As much as I've been chastising Jeff Jarrett and his Global Force Wrestling, which I'm like, whatever.
Have you seen that yet?
No, it doesn't exist.
That's probably why. Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it exists on paper, but there's no other wrestler signed besides Jeff Jarrett. He was able to broker the deal to get them on pay-per-views, and he got Jim Ross. And, you know, it's only on the internet, but he's been putting together these webisode series of showing the build-up towards Wrestle Kingdom 9, which I'm like, okay, I know it's only on the internet via YouTube, but hey, at least they're doing something to try to educate this U.S. wrestling audience. And New Japan on pay-per-view in 2014, that's going to be great.
Now, I'm looking now. I see a press release from Jeff Jarrett back in September they're planning a pay-per-view for January 15 as well. And they're doing it the same date as New Japan's show.
I believe that's it. What it is it's called, I think, Global Force Wrestling presents New Japan Pro Wrestling's Wrestle Kingdom 9 in the Tokyo Dome. Yes, that's a ridiculous
thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it. That is them. And they're still supposed to be working on a television deal, but right now they're going to be co-promoters for New Japan's U.S. expansion efforts.
Well, it says here, and again, hopefully this is only just one false or incorrect statement. It says it'll be branded a Global Force show, not a New Japan show.
I think that's probably for them getting their footing in the U.S. network. But for all intents and purposes, that is a New Japan show.
As long as Jeff Jarrett isn't in the booking, I'm good.
I believe he might have a match. But as far as booking, no, not at all.
And he brought Jim Ross to the table, so you can't be mad at that.
So I'm hoping that that's one in a series of not only pay-per-views, but pay-per-views called by Jim Ross.
You know, you got Jim Ross coming back to TV, and if they get up a streaming service too, yeah, they're going to make some noise. Because I would definitely watch me some New Japan stuff. I mean, if they go back to 72, that means Dynamite Kid stuff before he was a WWF guy.
That's right.
People need to see that. The guy was way ahead of his time.
Well, that's going to be... I'll get into what match you should be when we get to our I Saw It First segment. But there's an even better match that will blow people's mind when they watch this match. So now we're going to get to...
Wait. Let's stay on New Japan for 1 second.
Okay, sir.
Actually, WWE's network. What do you think of it thus far? We're a few months in. What do you think?
I like the fact that I can watch the pay-per-views for $9 instead of trying to find an illegal stream.
I didn't hear that.
I'll be honest.
Okay.
The only show that I paid for was WrestleMania. All the other ones, I would find an illegal stream and watch it because it just wasn't worth my money. So now, not only do I have a clear conscience, but now I can watch it in high quality HD on my television streaming from my Xbox. But I understand there's just so much there. I just don't watch it. I really don't. There's a couple of things that I have issues. One, you can't pick up where you left off. Like, if you just had to leave, it just won't automatically come back to where you were.
No.
Which, you know, has its pluses and its minuses. Like, sometimes maybe you don't want to go back to that show, but, you know, it's convenient to be there. Yeah, I should be able, if I leave off at Survivor Series 1995 watching the women's match and have to close out, I should be able to come back and bam, pick off right where I was instead of have to go find that card, have to go fast forward to that particular match that I was watching. Other than that, they don't really give you much. The issue that I have is one of the big selling points of the WWE Network is the massive library. And for the most part, they're not putting it up there, which I can see both sides to that because they do have to sell their current product with things to promote it. But at the same time, you have this footage that's just sitting in your vault. Damn it, if I'm put it to use for you.
You know, that is my one beef with the network, because they've got they've bought everybody's territory. They've bought all the music, bought all the broadcast rights, that is. You know, I want to see old AWA stuff. I want to see the territory stuff. I want to see the NWA stuff back when it was in the TBS studio. WCW Saturday Night, I don't give a shit. Monday Nitro, I don't give a shit. I want to see the studio stuff. I want to see the different territories. I want to see Florida, which I know they own, actually. I don't see, you know, older world class. And until they get that stuff up there, I'm in the same boat.
My thing is that they have access to almost any and every wrestler that is still alive, U.S. wrestler that's still alive. I want to see some more documentaries, some more roundtables, some more introspective things of that nature. Like, I like what they're doing with the rivalries. That's great. But let's take that back. Give me something from the 80s, you know. Give me some Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes. Let me see some of those matches. Rock and Roll Express versus the Midnight Express. Unfortunately, they can't use Jim Cornette in 2014 because they probably still have beef with him.
They need to write a check and squash this and make some money.
No, that's not what it is. What it is they disrespected him. So they both, it ain't about money, although I'm sure money will make a mofo do
money makes thing. It all, exactly, makes it all better.
But it wasn't about money, it was about respect. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a series or a show, the Midnight Express versus the Rockaway Express. The best of the Midnight Express as chosen by members of the Midnight Express. The creation, no, I mean the Four Horsemen, the Road Warriors. Oh, damn, they're dead too. Fuck.
Well, one of them is, yeah.
Yeah. You know, things of that nature where you put together some matches, show me some of their best angles. Why do we not have a DVD on the Freebirds yet? Or at the very least, a special, a show. You have most of, if not all of their work recorded. Put it to use.
They need to do a comprehensive Freebird DVD. They own the Georgia footage. They own the UWF footage. They own World Class. They can do this. Because I remember, and again, I'm older than you are, I remember when I first read about the Freebirds in the magazines in like 81, and their whole gimmick was, you know, three of us are going to defend this tag title because we're a corporation. Right. No, you can't do it. You're a team. No, we're a corporation. That means any two of us can defend these titles and fuck you. And that was just brilliant. And then they took it to Florida for a minute and UWF. No, Mid-South first. And then they went to World Class and it just went bananas. When they slammed the door on Kerry that Christmas Day in 82, it was on.
And, well, at least that is up there.
That is up there. That is up there. And did you see that? Did you see how they booked that? You know, that was bullshit. I mean, after you get hit in the face with the door, match is over. Okay, the match should have been over. But oh no, Kerry comes back. Like, oh, come on, man.
Well, come on now. You know they have to protect their homegrown talent. But it's like, ah. Look. But looking at it in 2014 eyes, I'm going to look at it in 1982 eyes. You have your excuse. Seriously, he had a cage door slammed in his face. And on top of that, you're moving towards the Von Erichs versus the Freebirds. There's your money. You don't need to save him the loss. But whatever, that's what they do. The other thing is that two other things, the reason why this network is not what it all can be. One, there needs to be a special on, like you just brought him up, the wrestling magazines. They need to do a special on PWI and their influence. I understand.
No, if you're going to do that, they need to be a special on PWI and his sister magazines because all of them, the same people.
Yes, exactly. Because that was just interesting to see that there was actually a magazine that covered wrestling, even kayfabe, but as a real sport.
And I loved it. Loved those books.
But the problem is that they have that. They still have this mentality. It's WWE, you won. The NFL. Well, I think technically the NFL won their war with the AFL. I mean, their name was there.
They absorbed the AFL, so it wasn't really a loss.
It was technically a merger.
It was a merger, yeah.
But
you could say USFL, they won that war.
Yeah, they won. I don't know if they bought everything to it, though.
They didn't want anything the USFL had, actually.
You know, the NBA won the war with the ABA. They bought it. They got their teams. They got their players, their coaches. You do not see the NFL and the NBA shying away from the AFL and the ABA. They accept it. They're like, look, this is our stuff. We own it. This is our legacy. NBA, they own the ABA. They're like, yeah, this is what there was. This is how it started. And look what we got out of it. It was a war. We won. So it's like WWE. You won. Everybody knows you're the top guy. You're the major league. When people think wrestling, for better or worse, they think WWE. It's fine to talk about Crockett. It's fine to talk about ECW. Well, they do that. UWF. It's fine to talk about all these other promotions respectfully and haven't done good business. But they just go out of their way to say, well, they were good, but they ain't no WWE.
And see, with the Legends of Roundtable, which they need to start doing again, they would bring in people like J.J. Dillon, Bill Watts, and talk about these areas and territories. That's what I like the best. And I'm looking at their website now, at their own old school lineup. They haven't put up all of their own old pre-85 shows. They've got tons of studio wrestling. They need to put up the show from Shea Stadium, where Bruno beat Zbyszko, ending that feud, and they need to put up the whole Zbyszko turn. That they need to put that up. That was a turn that came out of nowhere.
At the very least, can you put up the Sergeant Slaughter, Pat Patterson.
Oh, that's got
Alley fight.
That's got.
They have the MSG show the month before that, but they've still yet to put that up, and I've never seen it. I mean, I probably could go find it, but it's just like
bloodbath.
It's like, why have you not put that up? But whatever. So
they have so much. They're slipping in the network, man. There's so much footage they could put up, older footage, because you know what? All the recent stuff, don't care. There it is. Don't care.
I think the problem is they've half-assed this. They've half-assed it. They just felt, look, it's the WWE Network. You get this footage, that's good enough. But it's like, and you get the pay-per-views for $9.99, which tells you, let me get this straight. You have you average 4 million people every week on your show, and you can't get at least a million of them, 10%? Only 10% to spend $9.99 to see your pay-per-view. If they don't watch anything else, your pay-per-view for $9.99 when it's normally $54. That's an indictment of your marketing and your ability to sell something.
If they did another like an offshoot WWE branded network and had it everything pre-84 with all the other footage, I'd buy that in a heartbeat.
I'm away from New Japan. Now, they would have gotten a Fan for Life, which I know would never happen. If they had gotten a licensing deal, they came with a licensing deal with New Japan, All Japan, and Noah. I'm sure they probably wouldn't do that because they probably their motto is no, we own it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. But if they had done that, I would have been like, look, here's my money for the next 5 years. That's how much I would have wanted that. Now, hold up, Big Sexy. Can we take a quick break? Note this, and hopefully Mike can seam that in. Hold on.
Now, I'll give them this. They have definitely uploaded a lot of ECW Hardcore TV footage up in here, which is cool. But they need to go ahead and cut a check to Jim Cornette and get the Smoky Mountain footage up there. Because if you're going to be the stamp bearer for this business, you got to show
it. Actually, they do own Smoky Mountain. They just haven't put it up.
Then let's get it up there. Then let's, you know, expand our client base or our employee base and get that Florida footage up. Get all this stuff up there that people want to see. That's why I'm a part of the network. Damn the new stuff and damn NXT. I don't care. Get me the access to the old stuff that I'm always, you know, looking for on YouTube.
Well, unfortunately, they have their rollout strategy and they have their this is where I'm thinking of their way of doing things, for lack of a better term. So I don't know if we'll ever see it.
And you're rolling on these nuts. Rolling on these nuts. That's what they can do.
So now we get to the meat of the podcast, which got us back on here to fire up the mics and discuss one chick magnet punk.
Is that what the CM stands for?
That's what the CM stands for. Chick magnet.
I did not know that.
I'm glad I could school you.
Oh, go ahead, CM. Do what you do, player.
Now, for those new to the game, and CM Punk, he's been a nice big star. I'd say he was at his peak the number two wrestler in the WWE. According to him, at one point he outsold his t-shirts outsold John Cena at one point in time. Which I could definitely I could believe that. I don't know how long it lasted, but yeah. So he top draw. He had one of the longest WWE title reigns in the last, I want to say, 20 years. I believe it was 425 days, which lets you know I'm not a big Punk fan because I cannot rant. I cannot put that out there as quickly as some of the others, as I like to call them, Punk fans out there. Well, in January of 2014, the day after the Royal Rumble, CM Punk went up to Vince McMahon and told him pretty much that I'm gone. I'm going home. Everybody thought that a lot of people thought it was an angle, thought it was a work, that, oh, he's going to come back. Pretty much he said he was done. They tried to get him back, and he said no, he was done. He ended up getting his the day after WrestleMania, his wife left the company for a sabbatical. They got married, his wife being AJ Lee. I'm still very bitter about that. I could have had a chance, damn it.
You're not a chick magnet, so you know.
And quietly, in June of this year, his contract ran out, and his profile on the WWE.com website was moved from current roster to alumni, and that marked the end of CM Punk's career. And people have been wondering, no, what's going on? Where's he been? What's he doing? Why'd he leave? Everybody said was, it wasn't one thing. It was an accumulation of everything, and he just didn't want to be there any longer. News came out that the WWE sent a termination of his contract. There was a lawsuit that he countered with. And apparently, things have been settled, as now his merchandise is back up on WWE Shop Zone, and they're going to be making money off of each other. So, out of nowhere, Thanksgiving Eve, Colt Cabana, known indie wrestler, as well as close, if not the best friend of CM Punk, he had a podcast where CM Punk came on, and they put that out. And Kim Kardashian, we thought she did it. Bill Cosby almost did it. Sting for a minute there definitely did it. But no, last week CM Punk broke the internet with I believe it was a 90-minute podcast interview with Colt Cabana, and I remember in 1996, I'm going to take this back. In 1996, Tupac, he put out his diss track of Biggie, Puff Daddy, Bad Boy, the whole East Coast, Hit Him Up. In my local radio station, after they played it, I forgot which member of Above the Law was, but Above the Law, the rap group from the West Coast, on the radio. And after they listened to it, they was like, did he leave anybody out? And after listening to that CM Punk, that was the first thing I said was, did he leave anybody out? The only person he didn't crap on, of all the people I thought he would, was John Cena.
Yeah, he left John alone.
I was like, so that lets you know right there that the rivalry was just on television, because he didn't say anything bad about John. Well, he mentioned one thing, but it wasn't his fault. He mentioned that he did just as many Make-A-Wish as John Cena, but they never broadcasted it or publicized it. That was about the only time they mentioned John Cena, which I was totally shocked. But to still with the popular kids say today, he went in.
He definitely went in.
So before we go point by point, what did you think? Just from finding out that this was out there, listening to it, what did you think?
Well, when I first saw that it was going to be out there, and then I saw it was going to be on Colt Cabana's podcast, and that's his buddy. So you know, if anyone's going to get the straight skinny, it's going to be Colt Cabana. I'm like, well, let me take a listen. Then I heard a little brief snippet. I'm like, oh, yeah. We're going to listen to this thing. And one thing about Punk, now I don't know him, I've never met him, but the guy will let you know what's on his mind. And I don't mean that like he's an asshole by any stretch.
No, he is.
Well, you hate him because he married your woman.
He admitted he was an ass. But
nah, I don't think he is. I think he's just honest, and if you ask him, he'll tell you. You know, and Colt asked him, and he told him. And he said a lot of things that I was unaware of that were going on. But one thing I do see, and I kind of can relate to, is when, and this is not a rip on Cena, but whenever you have the all-American quote-unquote cat getting all the press and you do the same amount of work as he does, and yet you get no fucking, recognition for it, you get pissed off. I've lived that many times in life. So I can see why that whole Make-A-Wish thing would piss him off. I really can.
He made two points that really just shut me the fuck up, so to speak.
Oh.
Now, I'm of the stance that, and I've always noted, that, you know what, CM Punk? Sorry, just deal with it. John Cena is a bigger draw than you. Sorry, it's just the fact. Before you, Cena's ascension was 2004. CM Punk came in at 2005. Now, mind you, Cena... let me take that back. Cena's ascension to the top guy came in 2005. CM Punk was brought up to the main roster in 2006. I'm sorry. At that point in time, Cena had been in the company 3 years. He worked his way up to the top. Punk, you were the new guy. So before you became, before they gave you the opportunity to be the top guy, Cena had had, what, I wouldn't say like 5-6 years of being the top guy, of drawing, of pay-per-view main events where he drew, of selling all those merchandise to those kids, of getting media attention with his Make-A-Wish. So, fair or foul, he did that, and he earned that top spot. Now, I always say, you know what? Yeah, you can't make $10 million, but goddamn it, $6 million ain't nothing to sneeze at.
No, no, it ain't. No, it ain't.
But he let it be known that his goal was to be the main event of WrestleMania. And he actually said that the fact that he didn't main event WrestleMania makes his wrestling career a failure. Which, when I heard that, I'm like, well, okay, maybe I can't be mad. If he's going to take it that serious, I can't be mad at that.
Well, I don't think we're going to shut the door completely on him main eventing WrestleMania.
Oh, I'm not shutting the door. It will happen.
I'm sure it'll happen. I'm sure it'll happen. But see, the thing is, you know, as much as I like Punk as a talent, and I knew about him on the indie scene. I remember they brought him in that abortion of a restart of ECW, and I saw him in TNA, and I'm like, this is the guy. This is the guy. And Cena, and again, I don't know Cena, but I remember when I first saw him on some pro wrestling special, he was doing the prototype gimmick back in the late 90s, early 2000s, and then I saw him on WWF then, and he's doing the rap gimmick. I'm like, who is this guy? But he's got that look that sells money, you know, or prints money. And they put the machine behind him, and I'm not saying he doesn't warrant it because he does produce.
He does.
But at the same time, he gets booed a lot, too.
Well,
And if you put that same type of machine behind Punk, would you get the same reaction or the same money? Probably not. Because CM Punk, just by his appearance, is going to turn off certain segments. And that's just unfair, but that's reality.
Yes, yes, yes. That is so true. Well, to be honest, you mentioned the part about him being booed. I think a year into his first title reign, there was that growing backlash, and the thing was is that he just hadn't improved as a wrestler, and people I wouldn't say he was unlikable. They just knew, like, look, there's better talent on the roster. I was gonna say Eddie Guerrero. Yeah, well, before Eddie Guerrero's death, there was Eddie Guerrero, there was Batista, there was Edge, there was Randy Orton, there was The Undertaker, but here is John Cena getting pushed. And
but think about it, all those guys all got title runs too before Cena.
That is true. I think Eddie Guerrero was criminally, his title run was cut down, but you know, I heard that there was problems backstage, so I don't know the full story, but that was the reason why his title run was aborted. But the thing is, I don't think nowadays the booing is just like, you know, when Kurt Angle comes out.
Oh, but you suck.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yes. So I think the booing is just part of this is what we do. I would say 20% of that booing is authentic. Honestly, yeah. I guess I need to let it go, but I haven't liked John Cena ever since he did an interview. It was in 2007. No. 2007, right before WrestleMania 23 in Detroit, where he made the stick because somebody asked him, was like, well, you know, you're doing movies. Do we have to worry about you leaving Hollywood just like you leaving for Hollywood? And at that point, he brought up, well, yeah, you know, I'm not. It's like, no, this is me. I'm here full time. I'm not going to be like The Rock and leave the moment I get movies. Yeah, I can do both. And, you know, pretty much he threw shade at The Rock for, you know, being able to earn $5 to $10 million a movie and leaving wrestling, which, you know, let's be honest, Cena, you able to earn $5 to $10 million per picture without destroying your body, you do it too.
You're doing a heartbeat. Yeah, shut up.
So at that point, it's just like, look, you don't talk about another man's money. You know good and well why he left. First of all, it's not like The Rock was in his prime. He probably had a good 3 to 4 years of his prime left. I'll give him that. But it's not like he hadn't main evented WrestleManias and set records. It's not like he left as the company was going up and he bounced. The company had since hit its peak. So I guess I should let it go, but I still haven't forgiven Cena for talking about Rock's money like that. But back to CM Punk, the other statement that he made, which I never saw this side. I always said, because there were people that would complain, hey, they're bringing back, they're bringing these celebrities in, they're letting Undertaker work one match a year, they're bringing in The Rock, they're bringing in Brock and Batista, they're bringing in all these part-timers that are taking spots from people who've been here the whole year. And I would say, shut the fuck up. Because when those guys come in, ratings go up, house show attendance goes up, and the pay-per-view buys for those shows go up, which means you, Mr. Mid-Carter, your money goes up because you get a percentage of that. And I'm just sorry, I'm just going to call it what it is. You're never going to be the top guy. You're never going to be the second-tier guy. So you should be glad that Rock is coming back and is going to, instead of doing $800,000 for WrestleMania, WrestleMania is going to do $1.3 million, which means that's more money in your pocket. But he made a great point when he said, look, I'm a main eventer. I shouldn't be losing to these part-timers. I shouldn't be losing to The Rock twice, The Undertaker, and then Brock Lesnar all in the calendar year because they're going to go, and I'm going to stay behind. And in the casual wrestling fan's mind, here I am losing to these part-timers, which hurts my drawing ability, which hurts my money because now they're not going to come see me because I'm not as good as the other guy because you've established that. And on top of that, they're going to only pay for WrestleMania, which, oh, by the way, I'm not in the main event, which means that that's less money for me. And I'm like, that's actually a damn good point. It is hurting your drawing ability, and you're making less money from that. I'm like, okay, so I finally saw the light on that.
Well, you know, we talked about this off the air a little bit, too. I think it was Jim Ross who said this on an episode of the Legends Roundtable. I think it was the one about territories. Jim Ross and Bill Watts were saying that, you know, look, and he talked specifically about Muhammad Ali being in the Mid-South area back in the 70s and why Jake the Snake would not sell for him. And they went to Jake after the deal. They're like, what's the story? And Jake said, look, I got to work here tomorrow. This guy doesn't. So if he's going to just, you know, destroy me, that kills my product here, and I can't draw and earn money. So I see exactly where Punk is coming from. You know, you can't have your top guy lose to a, let's face it, a part-time, at best, wrestler. You just can't. Now, if he was to come in and beat up, you know, Heath Slater, fine. But you don't have him lose to your top guys. No way.
Yeah, Punk, I owe you an apology. That is a perfectly well-reasoned counterpoint to you jobbing to part-timers. Now, I admit, losing to The Rock in a high-profile good match doesn't hurt him. No. Losing to The Undertaker, possibly, but nobody expected you to win that match because it was WrestleMania, and at the same time, you had the best match of the show. Losing to Brock, I didn't see that one coming. I thought for sure Punk was going to beat Brock, and I thought it made sense. Okay, Punk beats Brock, gets back at Paul Heyman. But they decided that, no, we're going to, next year, we're going to build around Brock Lesnar winning the title, which, Daniel Bryan, you should be glad that you got injured, because if you didn't get injured, you'd probably be paralyzed defending that title against Brock at SummerSlam. So, you know, their long-term plan was, no, we can't have Brock lose now. But I think he should have won. So I definitely see that point. But let's go through some of the big statements that he made in his podcast. He states he despises the term pipe bomb now because everyone refers to promo as that now. Well, that's your fault. You introduced the term, and I can recall at least a good 3 months after that, you were like, pipe bomb, pipe bomb. You're like, yeah, dude, that's on you. It's just like when Steve Austin, at the time, he came up with the wet thing.
Oh, God.
He regrets it now. The other thing is that he said that he went to Vince McMahon and said that, hey, after he did that big famous promo, people wanted to sponsor him. They wanted to give money to the company and to him for him to walk out there in his ring gear. He said that he was at that time he was going to change his ring gear to be more like MMA and have sponsors on the shorts. Vince McMahon said no. What did Vince say? He said, well, if you do it, then everybody else is going to want to do it. You're like, fine. So what happens a year later? Brock Lesnar comes.
Yep. Yeah, he did.
And he walks out there. What was it? Jimmy John's?
Yep. Jimmy John's barbecue sauce or some shit like that.
On his trunk. So he said he was pissed about that. Now, to be fair, Brock Lesnar already had that endorsement. But still.
Well, see, no, that makes a very, very good point because Brock, when he came in, negotiated that.
Now, when Punk had left and went home, before he came back to sign the new deal, he should have said, you know what, I want this. And if he could have got it then, yeah. But you can't, I mean, again, I don't want to cross podcasts here, but it's like the whole Walmart thing that we talked about in Q-Storm you are wrong on. You know, you can't have an employment contract and then change terms. No, you know, that's that.
Now let's be honest. You know, Q is not going to listen to this.
Yeah, I know.
here's another good one. He said that, I believe this was 2012 when he had just, I think it was month three of his year-long WWE title run. He wanted, and it had been announced, or it had been whispered, that Chael Sonnen had asked CM Punk to walk him out to his match. It was a UFC fight. I believe it was going to be on Fox, so it was going to be on television, network television and everything. And CM Punk said yes. He goes to Vince like, hey, Chael Sonnen from the UFC, they want me to come walk him out to the ring. You cool with it? Vince told him no. we're gonna get you why he really got pissed at this. But one of the things Vince told him was that UFC was barbaric. He didn't like the fact that there was going to be women fighting and somebody could die. Now, I don't believe this, but CM Punk says, well, okay, you're right. But you do remember Owen Hart died in your ring.
Well,
I don't think he has the... I think he might have the balls, but I don't not believe... He might have the balls to do a lot of things, but to throw Owen Hart in Vince McMahon's face?
Yeah, I don't think he needed to do that.
I don't think he did that. I think he's embellishing that. It's a good point. But to me, that's just like, really, you're going to throw the death of a wrestler in this promoter's face who probably still has to live with that because you want to do a walk to a UFC? I don't think he did that. I really don't think he did that.
You know, he could have just talked about it indirectly because other wrestlers, unfortunately, have died in the ring.
Right.
Not necessarily on his watch, but it has happened. You know, and boxing has happened as well. And in baseball, I remember that umpire who died of a heart attack right before the Reds game once several years ago. So Vince needs to let that shit go. But it's his company, and I'm just a knucklehead, so I can see where he's coming from on that aspect as well. If he doesn't want to do it, he doesn't want to do it. But to turn around and, you know what, I'm not going to say it. You go ahead and say it.
But what people believe is the real truth is that Vince didn't want him walking down to the ring and not be identified by the UFC announcers, that it would make his champion at the time look like less of a star, which is a valid point. However, if I believe Chael Sonnen was probably in the main event. If the main event of a UFC show has a WWE wrestler who apparently people in the UFC like CM Punk, Dana White, the head of the UFC, likes CM Punk, there was no way whatsoever they would not say, wow, look, there's CM Punk in Chael's entourage. Because they've pointed out, because when Brock Lesnar famously lost the UFC title against Cain Velasquez. Undertaker was in the building, and they called him out. And as a matter of fact, they actually showed the footage of Brock Lesnar and Undertaker going jaw-jacking face-to-face. So that was... maybe he just didn't want to do it for Punk. Maybe he really did have this irrational belief that their champion would look bad because they wouldn't be noticed on television. However, which makes it look even worse is the fact that I believe a few months later, Floyd Money Mayweather asked Triple H to be in his entourage to this title fight. And there was Triple H, not identified by the ring announcer, standing in the boxing ring, holding up one of Floyd's belts. So he said that pissed him the fuck off. As
well,
it should have.
It should have. And see, one thing Punk said in that segment was, and I'm going to use this in my own lifestyle actually, it's better to apologize than seek permission. There it is.
Yeah, I've learned that too.
He should have just went ahead and did it and then dealt with the heat later on. Fuck it.
My thing is, why didn't he just go do it anyway?
I would have.
That would be my thing. It's like, you know what? You're asinine. This is an asinine idea. I'm your champion. What are you going to do to me?
Exactly. What are you going
to
do to me?
The plan, which brings me to another point he said. So here is, so this is after, This is after WrestleMania, because he jumped around a lot. This is after WrestleMania. They go to Rock, decides, you know what? I want to be the WWE champion. I'll come back for next WrestleMania, but I want to win the title and defend it. And they're like, okay, well, fine. We'll, obvious thing, we'll do the rematch. Rock versus Cena, which to me, I didn't want to see it again because I knew what the outcome was going to be. But they decided we're going to put the world title on Rock and have him defend it. Cena can get his win back. We have this redemption story. Plus, he wins the world title. Problem is that Cena, that CM Punk is the champion at the time, and Rock is like, because Rock knows business. He's like, look, I just can't beat anybody for the title, or it's not going to mean anything. I need a strong heel. So apparently Vince went to CM Punk, told him, look, Rock wants to win the title. He wants to be the strong heel. So at the time, CM Punk was the babyface. They said, you have to turn heel, or we're going to give the title to Daniel Bryan and have him face the Rock. Which probably pissed him off. It's like, I mean, it's just kind of something. It's like, look, I'm the champion, and first of all, you want me to do something so I can lose the belt. First of all, and you're talking about so you can make the rest of it. I'm your champion. You're talking about, yeah, we need you to do this so you can lose the belt so we can get to our WrestleMania match, which I'm not a part of. That's got to be a blow to your ego.
Yeah, that is not cool.
And apparently Punk didn't want to do it because he was making a killing with his merchandise. And he said that after the fact that he lost, that his merchandise checks, because he turned heel and they weren't selling as well, were cut in half. He didn't state how much the money was, but goddammit, half is half.
Half is half. That's true.
So what do you think about the fact that they pretty much came to him and was like, turn heel or we're putting the title on Daniel Bryan? Which, if I'm Daniel Bryan, I hear this, I'm like, fucking Punk. If that's true, because he would have had, not only would he have had a lengthy world title run, but he would have had a main event match with The Rock.
Yep. You know, Punk, I mean, again, I can see his point, and Rock, and I'm gonna criticize Rock a little bit here.
What?
Rock, well, hear me out. Rock is one of the boys, okay? He grew up in this business. He is not some fly by night. He should have went to Punk directly. I said, look, man, I'm only going to be here for a few shots. I like to work with you. What do you think we can come up with together and lay something out and then take it to Vince? That way it doesn't come as such a blindside.
That's true, but I think more than... That's true. That's a good point. But you got to remember that prior to... This was WrestleMania 28, the Miami one, that Punk had made some statements about part-timers, which everybody took it as... He was taking a shot at The Rock. So The Rock probably wasn't his best friend at the time. Rock was probably like, man, fuck him. Yeah.
But Rock should know better, because there is beef that I just recently learned about, that back in the day, Sean tried to get Rock buried and fired. I didn't know that. You know, Sean would never work with Rock. And so when Rock became The Rock and they came to him, would you work with Sean? Nope. So Rock's been on both sides of that. So he could have squashed this.
But The Rock wasn't trying to bury and fire. I see your point, but The Rock wasn't trying to bury and get CM Punk fired. But, you know, because The Rock put up a tweet saying that these new wrestlers do not understand the business, which he said, which is smart. It's like, look, dude, I'm The Rock. I'm going to get more attention, more eyeballs.
That's true.
On wrestling.
That's
and
true.
Me being in the main event of WrestleMania is going to increase the buyer list, which puts more money in your pocket. Now, again, Punk made his
means
case.
Means we all get paid, yeah.
Yeah. Punk made his case that, well, you know, it doesn't benefit me because, you know, I'm losing and my drawing power goes down. But the other thing is that, so Punk was a little bit reluctant. I'm thinking to myself, like, what the hell are you reluctant for? You're going to be in a main event at the Royal Rumble, which is still one of the bigger pay-per-views of the year, with The Rock. So go ahead and get that money and that high profile, because people are going to be talking about it on Twitter. But, you know, the man has an ego. The man has an ego. But, again, Daniel Bryan is probably like, fucking Punk.
You know, but still, Rock, I mean, I'm not, you know, criticizing Rock, and Punk could have, you know, manned up and looked at the, I hate this phrase, looked at the big picture, but he didn't. You know, he didn't. He got his little tattooed panties in a bunch, and that's, we got what we got.
So another thing he mentioned is that, okay, this is after WrestleMania 2013, after he's done the job to, wait, No, I'm sorry. This is WrestleMania 2012. They decided that they were going to put heat on CM Punk by giving him a stable. They approached him with three guys. Big Show, Daniel Bryan, and Seth Rollins. Now, CM Punk tells a story that, you know, me and Big Show should not be together. Just period. This doesn't work. He said, I love the guy. We shouldn't be together. He said, me and Daniel Bryan, we should be Bret and Shawn Michaels. We should not be working together. And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
I agree with that.
They're just going to kill each other's heat. And so he said, he countered with, well, why don't you give me all three guys from developmental? And he said, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Chris Hero. Triple H didn't like Chris Hero. They decided to go with Roman Reigns. So he's taking credit for the creation of the show. Which to me is like, how do you take... They came to you, said, we're going to give you a stable. We're going to give you these guys. You say, fine, I'll take the stable, but I want these guys. They become the Shield. How do you get to take credit for the Shield? It was their idea. That's like Maserati wanted to take credit for Kiss.
Yeah, it is. Prince fans, do your homework. You should know who that is.
It's like, okay, yeah, you put a little twist on that, but let's not get things twisted. That was my song.
Yeah.
So that one, he kind of lost me there on that, too. Then he went in on Ryback. Now, for those
who... Oh, yes.
I want to feel bad for him, but it's like, God damn it, Goldberg didn't do this much damage.
No, no shit. And Goldberg was dangerous.
He calls Ryback the steroid guy. He says, hey, I caught it like I see it. And he stated that in one of their first matches, which the backstory on that was, it was Hell in a Cell 2012, yes. John Cena had got hurt. They needed a new opponent. Ryback, they were building him up, giving him the Goldberg push, which was quick, short matches where he dominate, doesn't sell. And he was getting over to an extent. And actually, he got over really big because that main event match with CM Punk did better than the year before. And which was actually one of the few pay-per-view main event matches that Punk had that did better than the year before. But unfortunately, during the match, Ryback kicked him in the stomach so hard that he broke his ribs. And he never got an apology.
See, Ryback is wrong. You know, Ryback is flat out wrong. You don't do that. I mean, you don't, you know, give somebody a potato like that and don't own it later on.
Yeah, I don't get that either. But, you know, it's... You know, it's kind of weird because another famous injury happened between Owen Hart and Steve Austin. And apparently Owen Hart was so scared that he never called and apologized to Steve Austin. So maybe it was a case of that. But still, you broke his fucking... I don't care how scared you are.
You make the call, man. Yeah. You
broke his neck.
And you don't... No, fuck that. You don't make the call. You go over there.
Yeah,
you go man to man, hey, man, I slipped, whatever happened, whatever, and you own that shit.
Yeah, and it actually, and history might be different because he didn't make that apology because Steve Austin said he didn't want to work with Owen Hart again, which, you know, he might have been able to forgive him and say, you know what, it was just a small botch. But the fact that you didn't apologize, yeah, he probably got bitter at that. And he probably never forgave
him. Rightfully so. You know, rightfully so.
Yeah, it's amazing how I'm sorry can make things better.
Sometimes. I mean, it's just you just make the effort, man. Damn.
So now we jump ahead to WrestleMania.
As far as Ryback, you know, he also said about Ryback, you know, after he broke his rib, he said, and he pulled him aside and said, look, are you just a big stupid goofer? Do you know what you're doing? And Ryback's all, I'm a big stupid goofer. He's like, well, there we go.
Now, further, because that's getting ahead. So they decided after WrestleMania, as he comes back, they make him turn babyface. They said, well, you know, after you do the Rock thing, we're going to put Ryback with Paul Heyman. You're going to work with him again. Punk is like, no, I don't want to work with him again. He's dangerous.
He is dangerous.
And I'm like, why didn't you fight harder? That's my thing. So apparently one of the first angles they did is, which I don't understand why, you know, which I got to put a little bit of this on CM Punk. You already said the man is dangerous. Why would you let them book you being put through a table by the guy and not fight back? Like, I would be like, nah, he's not going to do that spot. And I've seen this. I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen the spot because he says that he was which is technically his fault because he could have done he could have been a little bit more careful on dropping him. But if you see most spots you go through the middle of the table. The table, you're perpendicular to the table. This one, a press slam, CM Punk was parallel, which yes. And it was just slightly off. He hit the edge of it, went through it, bam, on the concrete. And he was pissed. But
I can't say as I blame him. Damn.
To me, Ryback is the third person you blame in that. Number one is yourself. You should have been like, no. Number two is whoever decided to do that spot with that guy. No. Hell no. No. No, 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 no. You want me to what? Nah, fuck that. I'll put him through a table. How about that? How about that? Let me get the heat.
Okay. And then clumsy. He's clumsy and dangerous, man. He's just not good. He needs to go back to NXT and learn. He's got to learn his craft, man. He really does.
Now, what makes it a little bit funnier is the fact that apparently Ryback, I guess he listened to this and he was getting all these tweets. So he decided to, he put up a picture with 10 Rybacks. No, it's 11 Rybacks. 11 represents the number of, no, I'm sorry, it was 9 Rybacks. 9 represents the number of titles that CM Punk had won, standing around a broken table with a CM Punk figure in the middle of it. I'm sorry, I laughed my ass off on that. I was like, that's a good one. That is a good one. And people would say, it's like, why the hell does he have 9 different figures of himself? But still, I'm sorry, that was a good one.
That was still a good one, though.
Yeah, and he said, like, look, if I was that insecure and fragile, I'd come up with a bunch of lies, too. And I'm like, hey, he got you. You know, he's like, I'm not going to take... I'm sorry, I earned a little respect. He earned my respect with that one. That was a good comeback. That was a really good comeback on his part. So, apparently, now we're up to January 2012. He has the match with The Rock. It's good, not great. And he does the job. And he's thinking, look, I'm kind of hurt. I got this knee. I want to take some time off. They're like, no. You can't do that. We need you to do a rematch with The Rock. And I'm sorry, I skipped over this part. So after he did the feud with Ryback, he injured his knee, and apparently he was supposed to be out 6 weeks. Vince McMahon calls him up, tells him, "Yo,
hey pal," yeah.
Which they're good for, and we'll talk about this later. But they're good for that. Like, yeah, we know you're supposed to be 6, but we need you back in 3. They told him they need you back in 2.5 weeks. We're gonna have you do a TLC match with Ryback. Mind you, this was before he missed them on the table. This was after the broken ribs. So he's pissed. Like, wait a minute, you have me booked January, like the second week of January, to do a TLC match with Ryback. The guy hurt me. First of all. Second of all, I'm not ready. He's like, what he says is going to be 6 weeks, so 2.5, we can do that. He's like, let's just wait. He's like, no, because we're going to do the Royal Rumble WWE title match with The Rock, and we need to get that started, so we need to be done with Ryback. Which to me, I just been like, well, let's just be done with fucking Ryback. I don't want to do that match that soon. But he ended up coming back and doing the match, TLC. Apparently, he got a little dinged, nothing injured or hurt. But to me, again, it's like, dude, stand up for yourself. You know, it's a 6 weeks. Why are you coming back 2 weeks earlier to do a TLC match? For television on top of that. Not a pay-per-view. Sure. For television. So, I mean, as shitty as that was, I gotta say, Punk, that's on you. Say no.
Well, he's trying to be a team player. You know, I can see that. He should have said no. You know, but he's trying to be a team player and, you know,
if I can see him
do what's best for business. You know, yeah.
I can see him being a team player for John Cena, for Daniel Bryan, for Randy Orton, for The Rock. But for Ryback?
Oh, hell no. No, no. No. Starve, nigga. No.
So apparently he said he went into that match with The Undertaker at WrestleMania with the biggest fucking chip on his shoulder because he was mad that he wasn't in the main event. He tried to maneuver himself into a three-way with The Rock and Cena, which that wasn't going to happen. And
I can't see a three-way being a main event at Mania. I just can't see that.
It should be.
It shouldn't be.
But, you know, hey, he tried. So he said that after the match, it was like, yeah, that was the best match on the show. That was the main event. So CM Punk was like, oh, that was the main event? Well, fuck it, pay me like it was the main event.
There it is.
Give me the money that, give me the same money Brock and Rock and Triple H and Cena got. And it was kind of like, So I had to laugh my ass off on that. Like, yeah, yeah, pay me. Fuck you, pay me. So after WrestleMania, he gets this surgery and they call him up and they're like, yo, we need you to come back. We want you to do this match with Jericho in June. He's like, look, I'm not going to be ready. I'll come back at SummerSlam. He's like, no, we need you back in June because we have this big program. We want you to wrestle in the main event. Which, you know, it wasn't in the main event slot, but for all intents and purposes, it was the main event of SummerSlam 2013. We want you in the main event of SummerSlam with Brock Lesnar. So he's like, oh, okay. He's like, wait a minute. Who's going over in that match? So they said,
not you.
They're like, June, we want you to face Chris Jericho, and you're going to get the win. In July, you do the Money in the Bank match, and Paul is going to turn on you, and then you're going to go to Brock. And he's like, well, who's going to win? He's like, Brock. And he's like, why? Is Brock going to be there the next day? There's like, no, he's not coming back to Royal Rumble. He's like, well, fuck that. He's like, I shouldn't have to lose to another part-timer. He's like, I just lost to The Rock twice. I just lost to Undertaker. And now you want me to lose to Brock? Well, I guess they must have gave him some money because he did. We all know he did the match. He did the match. But it was just funny. Then they hit him with the, we want you to do Ryback. And then on the first night in of doing the Ryback match after Brock, to continue to feud with Paul Heyman, he gets thrown through the table. Well, he misses the table and hits the ceiling, the cement floor. Now, like I said, I think he should have beat Brock. But in your opinion, should that match have gone differently?
That match shouldn't happen at all, because if Brock's going to be a part-timer, he should not be in there with your top-flight guys. If he is, it should go to like a no contest or a run-in or something. You know, a part-timer, no matter who he is, should not be getting clean victories over your top-tier guys. It just sends a bad message. Now, Vince was concerned about looking second-tier when he walked to the ring with Chael Sonnen. It's the same effect. You have your top-tier guy, you know, your number one heel, losing again to someone who's going to be gone the next day and not be back for 6 months. No, that match shouldn't have happened.
Now, my thing is, and you can't say this now because they've totally changed up their pay-per-view model, but in 2010, I believe it was, Brock fought two fights that year. Those fights did 1.4 million. No. I believe it was 2.4 million. Pay-per-view buys.
Damn.
That was more than the entire WWE pay-per-views for the year.
Wow.
I'm not saying Brock could have done that for the WWE, but if booked right, he might have gotten close, which means you don't put him on post-WrestleMania pay-per-view backlash, Extreme Rules against John Cena with a four-week bill. You build to SummerSlam, and you get your money back. But, so, in my opinion, you know, you do the loss, get your money. Do the loss, get your money. I'm going to keep on saying it. Do the loss, get your money. We got some breaking news. Breaking news, nigga. This isn't wrestling related, but I just happened to be looking at my television, and they're going to have a sneak peek of the Breaking Bad spinoff, Better Call Saul, during the Walking Dead after show.
Tonight?
Yes.
Cool. So during the Talking Dead show, that thing? The
Talking Dead, yes.
And I hate the host of that show. Yes, but me too. It's cool. You know, we'll watch it.
So then we get to which I believe is the breaking point. Apparently, at around December of 2013, he started noticing, well, maybe November. I think it was November 2013. He started noticing a small bulge on his back. It wasn't hurting. He goes to the doctor, who he calls an idiot. He calls it. He said he didn't know. He said he would have him do concussion tests, and he passed. He's like, this concussion test is bullshit. Then they're like, well, we want you to run the ropes. And he's like, well, why? Yeah, just pass your concussion test. The doctor tells him, well, we're not sure. So he thinks this doctor is an idiot. So he goes to the doctor. Look at this. What is it? He's like, oh, it's a calcium deposit. We'll give you antibacterial. Months go by. Things getting bigger. He's feeling crap. He said it's turning purple and green, which I'm like, huh? And He goes to him and is like, look at this thing. This thing is bigger. I need you to do something. Cut it out. Give me and do something. He's like, well, I can't cut it out. I'll give you some more antibiotics. He's like, I've been taking fucking antibiotics. I took your fucking antibiotics and I got diarrhea when I was in London and shitted myself at SmackDown taping, which is
I wish I had seen that. I did not really? Know what happened.
Google it, you'll be able to find it.
Oh, I gotta find this.
So he's like, look, he's like, you're fucking useless. I have this thing on my back. Just cut the fuck out. But they wouldn't do it because he's like, well, we can't do it now because then we have to staple you up and you have to, because this is the Royal Rumble. This is before the Royal Rumble. It's like, no, we can't do that because you're supposed to go perform. Royal Rumble, Kofi Kingston, he says he likes the guy, but the guy gave him a concussion on this dive into the ring clothesline. He said he has a concussion. The doctor's like, what do you want me to do? I'm like, what? they sent Kane out. They're like, hey, Kane's going to throw you out. He's like, no. Kane touches me, I fucking leave. So he goes through the match. Everything is great. But the next day, he's just like, fuck. He's like, I'm sick. I have a concussion. I don't like being here. I'm not going to be the main event of WrestleMania. They're talking about Batista versus Orton. He's like, fuck it. I've had it. I'm leaving. So he goes in and he talks to Vince McMahon and Triple H. Triple H is right there. And I'll go ahead and read this, what he says. He says, it boggles my mind how Daniel Bryan has not figured into your plans to be the main event of WrestleMania because this is his fucking year. Just like 2 years ago, mind you, he sent this to Vince in front of Triple H. Just like 2 years ago was my fucking year. I was fucking white, fucking hot, just like he is now. And what did you do? You fed me to this guy, pointing to Triple H. He said, Vince responded by saying it was just a concussion talking. Punk says he turned to Triple H and said, all due respect. Oh, and he told him, you're going to be working with Triple H this year at Mania, WrestleMania 30. Punk says he turned to Triple H and said, all due respect, I do not need to wrestle you. You need to wrestle me. I do not want to wrestle you. I seriously resent you for not putting me over 3 years ago when you should have. That would have been best for business, but you had to fucking come in and squash it. And then I had to lose the fucking Truth and Miz. It didn't make any business since then. It doesn't make any business since now. I am in a position where I can tell you that I don't have to, nor do I want to wrestle you at WrestleMania. I don't care if I was supposed to win. And then he tells him that I don't want to be here anymore. He shakes Vince's hand. He hugs Vince. Apparently Vince was crying. And he shakes Triple H's hand and walked out.
Wow.
Now, because we talking about, oh, there's no doubt that CM Punk is going to be in the main event of WrestleMania at some time in the future. Punk says he's done with the WWE. We'll get into maybe reason why he'll never come back. But if this is true, if Triple H has his way, CM Punk would never be in the WWE. Because you do not tell me that.
Yeah, but see, Triple H, I forgot where I read this. I forgot who said it. But Triple H is not the guy he thinks he is. He's the guy, I think Jim Ross said it. He's the guy who works with the guy. You know, because name, and Punk said this, name one great Triple H match, and I can't think of one.
Sorry. Two that I can think of is the WrestleMania 17 match and the Iron Man match with The Rock.
Oh, the Iron Man with The Rock was bullshit. That was bullshit. For an Iron Man match, and neither one of them has the skill set or the ability to pull off an hour. Not like, you know, Bret and Shawn or Flair and Steamboat. No way. No way. Uh-uh. No, that was not a great match by any stretch.
I will agree to disagree.
Fair enough.
But my thing is that he's not lying about that. I keep telling people that CM Punk, the money drawing number one main event babyface of the company, died the night Triple H was booked to pedigree him after interference from Kevin Nash. It made no sense then, and even worse, it definitely killed his momentum and stunted him from being a main event, a true money drawing main eventer.
I agree. I mean, and now that he's in bed with the boss's wife, come on, man. He's got to do what's best for business, and he's not doing that in a lot of cases. Now, I will give him credit for reaching out to Bruno Sammartino and getting him back in the fold.
Agreed.
That was major, and he deserves credit for that. But if he's just going to push, you know, people he likes, Randy Orton, you know, and keep getting shots like that and not giving the guys that he, in his limited view scope, doesn't see worthy, Daniel Bryan, that's not good for business. The people want to see Bryan. And they saddled him with a shitty gimmick, too, and he got it over.
And that's the thing that I feel there's a difference between Vince and Triple H. I feel like Vince, almost no matter what, almost because there's only this one that didn't happen. That no matter what, Vince, if he can make money off of you, he will bring you back. The one exception was Randy Savage, for whatever reason. People say that he smashed Stephanie McMahon. We don't know if it's true or not. That's the most logical. That's the most logical, because there's nobody can think of any other reason why Randy Savage was on the shit list. Nobody.
Yeah. If he did the dirty to the boss's daughter and when she was underage, especially,
And, you know, he brought back the Ultimate Warrior. He brought back Hogan multiple times. He brought back Bret Hart. But see, I think but the thing is that for the Bret Hart Vince McMahon thing, that was more Bret than Vince. Vince was look, if I can make money off of you, please, I'll bring you. Bret, you just need to calm down. You're having a temper tantrum. Pretty much that's what that was. So, but Triple H, I don't know. I really don't know. He's never had any. I'm trying to think. People believe Kurt Angle. People believe Jericho. Jericho is only brought back because of McMahon, not Triple H. And even to some extent, The Rock. So I think CM Punk, who has made it public, who made these quotes public, I cannot see myself seeing Triple H being welcoming to bring him back. Unless he's gonna job him out.
Oh, that ain't gonna happen. No, Punk ain't doing that.
Yeah. And right now, Punk is in the best leverage position ever.
He doesn't need their money, so you can't make him come in there and do a Saba Simba gimmick and job out like that. No way.
I mean, he said that he's never coming back to wrestling. I say never say never. There's been very few that have walked away from wrestling and never came back.
Maybe name he one.
Jack Briscoe. That's the only one people come up to. But to be fair, Jack Briscoe is in his mid to early 40s, so, you know, his prime was done.
Jack didn't come back. That's true.
Now, I was going to say Bruno Sammartino, but nope. Nobody was able to get him back out in 87. So, I think, and CM Punk is 36. I think at some point, they're going to call him. They're going to call him. And at some point, he's going to feel an itch to want to get back out there. I really believe it. I mean, if it doesn't, then more power to him. He has a beautiful wife. Apparently, he has a ton of money and a ton of different offers out there. So be it. But then we get into, this is why it's great to have Mark Wiggins Esquire. So, one, he finds out that lump on his back was a staph infection, which was not diagnosed correctly, which, can we say malpractice?
Yeah, we can.
Although, I've been saying this. Look, dude, you've been calling this doctor an idiot for God knows how long. At some point, why did you not go get a second opinion?
Well, whose doctor is this? Is this his doctor? Or is this
WWE?
Then we have an unsafe work environment, too, as well.
So, yeah, he got them by the balls on that. So.
Yeah.
But I still got to ask, like, Punk, why the fuck didn't you go? You're saying you don't trust this guy or you think he's an idiot. Why are you not going to another doctor? I don't get that. So I put some of that on him. Why are you just going to keep taking this guy at face value if you're saying he's an idiot? But so that's one thing. You got the malpractice. Two, apparently he says he's done with them. He finds a check that he hadn't cashed. I guess it must have expired. He calls them up like, yo, yeah, this is check that you guys sent me. I need a new reissue. He didn't say how much it was, but I would assume it was probably at least half a mil. They're giving, he said, and by the way, I haven't got a royalty check in God knows how long. So reissue me this check and send me my royalties, or do you put me on the phone with somebody. Like, oh, he's not here. I'll let him know you call. So they were like ducking and dodging him, and they wasn't giving him his money. So then they, on an investor's call, they said he was on a sabbatical. Then they tell him that he was they texted him, or I can't believe if they texted or called him and told Punk that he was suspended for 2 months, which the suspension would have been up after WrestleMania. I don't know why he points that out, because from all intents and purposes, it sounds like Punk is done with the WWE. So he still hasn't got the reissue check. He still hasn't got his royalties up to date. He just said, you know what? Screw it. Fine. I guess we're done with each other. We'll be done. That's a lot of money, but screw it. I'm done. We're done. He gets a June, I think 2 days before his wedding, he says he gets a call from Triple H. Triple H asks to talk with him. He's like, no, I'm planning my honeymoon. We could talk after my honeymoon. Triple H is like, okay, fine. We're good. No, actually, it was a text. His wedding goes. He gets a FedEx letter from the WWE saying that he was in breach of his contract as of January 27th, and they were terminating his contract. He says, I didn't quit. I was fired. I was fired on my wedding. Now, you're the lawyer. What I just outlined to you, how is it that he can claim he didn't quit, he was fired?
Well, he was neither. It sounds like if his contract ran out, then he wasn't fired, he just wasn't renewed. But the fact is, also during that portion of his podcast, he said that they are withholding his money because of a breach of contract back in January.
That's where you fucked up.
Yes. You done fucked up now.
Yes.
Because if you don't move on the breach, when it happens, you waive the breach. So they waived it. So the fact that they kept his money puts them in breach. And didn't he subsequently sue them and get a lot more money?
That's what he says, yeah. That's what he said.
You know, because to be completely honest, when he said that, and he's talking about how they kept his money after January, I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to send him an email. I said, look, man, let me go get your money. You know, but he went and got it, so, see? You know, good for him, because you can't do that.
You see, kiddies, that's what they call being a hustler.
I'm a hustler, baby.
So, yeah, so to me, it's like he's saying he was fired. I'm like, no, they wasn't fired. What they did was they tried to go through the proper legal channels to not pay your money because they're mad at you.
Which, that's all it is.
You walked out, so. And, okay, so not only did you walk out, but you said that a week later, Vince McMahon called you up and said, are you ready to come back? And you were like, no, I'm done. So I'm still trying to figure out, how do you get to claim you were fired when you walked out and you were willing to let go of not only your past royalties, but a reissue of a check that you hadn't cashed? That don't sound like somebody that's fired. That sounds like somebody that quit.
And also, when you get fired, they have to have your last check in hand when you get fired.
Well, they gave him breach of contract, so.
That was bullshit. Yeah.
See, this is the problem with the WWE. They get petty sometimes. They should have just went through the. Just, it's like, look, was it really worth it? And apparently it wasn't, because they lost money on this. They should have just paid him his money, reissued his check, and just been done with it. Why are they trying to get all slick with it and like, well, and get be butthurt that he left? Yeah, that to me was just a dumb move. A completely dumb move by the WWE.
But I think he'll be back simply because when he left and AJ was taking a sabbatical, I thought they had left together. But now that she's back, he'll get the itch.
Now, here's the question. I'm going to call this the Chris Brown, hoes ain't loyal. Now.
Uh-oh.
Now, if I'm AJ, I get it. You're not happy. You're not happy with how they're booking you. You're hurt. You want time off. Fine. That has nothing to do with me. You know, as far as you know, they're mistreating you because they're not giving. She can see it as they're mistreating him because he's not where he wants himself to be. I can excuse not leaving them. But when they send your husband a termination letter on your wedding day, how does AJ Lee go back to the WWE?
Well, considering that she's their most over diva, I'm sure her checks are pretty substantial herself.
But I'm just okay.
And we all know sometimes marriages don't work out, and you know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just saying, if that was your girl, wouldn't you be giving her the side eye of why the fuck are you going back? You saw what they did. They sent my termination letter, trying to jip me out of probably millions of dollars, which millions of your dollars as well. And you're going to go back and work for them?
I'd say, baby, if that's what you want to do, fine. But you saw how they did me. I'm done. But if you want to go deal with that, I'm your man. I will support you. But good luck with that.
You're a better man than me. I'd have been like, okay. I'd have been like, Chris, you was right, homie. where them hoes at? We're going to go ahead and get that. I need a new one. I got to replace this one.
where them hoes at?
But I'm just saying that to me that's one thing that's flown under the radar, that nobody's called out AJ for, like, why the hell did you go back to the WWE? Like, What the hell was that about?
And if anything, and this is unfair to her, but she may end up being the conduit that instigates a dialogue between both sides once they cool, once they both cool down.
Well, I think a lot of people are suggesting that she might be, she's not long for the company herself, that, you know, her next contract, I don't know when it ends, that that'd be it. But a lot of people were saying that, you know, she had already gave her notice, and when her, with her losing a Survivor Series, that that was the step one in the process of her no longer being a WWE diva.
Now, that could be true as well.
So, with all that being said, do you have a different opinion of CM Punk, or has it, is it still the same?
No, I still like the guy for just being, you know, being his gimmick, for lack of a better phrase. You know, he felt he was treated wrongly. He gave the company everything and more. He had valid points. I don't think he went about them in the correct manner, but he had valid points. And, you know, especially about jobbing out to part-timers. I would have done that my damn self. I would have said, no, this ain't going to work here, man.
That's the now, best point that he did bring up.
Yeah, yeah, and Ryback. You know, Ryback being a big goof.
Well, you know, people are, oh, wow. I'm sorry. I got distracted by television. People are speculating that who's gonna get the worst CM Punk chance? Will it be AJ, Triple H, Ryback, or Brock Lesnar?
Triple H.
Yes.
Triple H. The minute he comes out, he's gonna hear about it.
I think there was probably another 3 months of AJ Lee getting the CM Punk chance, but after this, yeah, them CM Punk chants are going to be there almost forever for those. I think Ryback is going to get it the worst.
No, yeah, Ryback get it the most intense, but the longest lasting will be Triple H.
And I think they better be ready to turn Ryback heel, because he is not getting cheered.
No.
He is not getting cheered. Yeah, after this, he is not getting cheered. You might as well just plan that heel turn.
They'll just team him with Rusev and get him out of my face, man. Because that team with oh God, Kurt Hennig's kid? Yeah. No. No. That didn't work. Ryback needs a manager. Ryback needs a mouthpiece. And that is something that is sorely missed over the last 20 years of wrestling. You don't have the good mouthpiece. When Paul Heyman's out there, I stop what I'm doing because he's that good. They need to get these guys back, like Cornette, Heyman, and let them do what they do, because these guys need them. They do.
So, what is your over-under on Punk coming back?
Let's say
3 years, over-under.
Oh, no. Way under. It is November. Oh, well, December for all intents and purposes. I say he's back by SummerSlam.
I don't know about that one.
Yep.
Well, according to Dave Meltzer at the Wrestling Observer, they say that there's been a number of opportunities of media people approaching him prior to him leaving WWE. Some for a talk show, which I'm like, I don't understand how that can go.
He got on the Talking Dead one, so you never know.
Yeah, but he was as a panelist, you know, him hosting a talk show. No. Unless it's a round table thing, possibly. But I mean, I guess it all depends on what does his success look like outside of the WWE. I mean,
and again, you know, he still has, again, I'm not trying to burn the guy, but he can only go so far with all that ink on him. His appeal is going to be somewhat limited just because of his appearance, which is unfair, but it's true.
Well, maybe he can cover that up, though. You know, he can, you know, suit and shirts and whatnot.
You really think he's going to put on a suit and shirt? CM Punk.
You know, and this was the thing. People had talked about why CM Punk, it was Lance Storm, he mentioned why CM Punk and a Daniel Bryan were not pushed to the top as opposed to a John Cena. One, John Cena looks, quote-unquote, larger than life. John Cena's about 6'4". He's a meaty 240, 260, yep, muscular guy. Yep. He cleans up nice. He looks, you know, he looks the part of a top wrestling attraction. Whereas Daniel Bryan, he got that stringy hair. He has that long beard. He's short.
He needs to cut that fucking beard off.
But that's part of the appeal. I wouldn't say that. But, you know, but as far as the mainstream media, they look at him like he's a little unkempt. And then you look at you look at CM Punk with all the tattoos. He's small. He's he's smaller than CM Punk. He's not as tall, and he looks like the way he dresses, he looks like just a regular goth dude. So I can see that. So that is an excellent point. And they were saying that's why you're not. You need to change. But the thing is, that's CM Punk. If he does change that look, if Daniel Bryan does change that look, the appeal of who they were is kind of lost. Because then it's like, that's not the Daniel Bryan and CM Punk that we know and love.
And see, that is a microcosm of what's wrong with the WWE, because they want you to look a part before they care if you can work or not. Which means back in the day, a guy like Dick Murdoch would never have gotten a run there, ever.
Hell, Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes. Oh, they want to get you Dusty the time of day. Get your fat butt out the ring. Yep.
Exactly.
And they need to get past it. If a guy can work, he can work. If he can't, he can't. You know, it's that simple.
Even more so, you don't even have to work, because Hogan wasn't the best worker, although by today's standards, he actually might be better than someone on the roster.
By today's standards, he's Dory Funk. You know, I mean, damn.
But the thing is, he could connect to the crowd.
That's why Dusty got over.
Exactly. Well, that's enough of CM Punk. We have one last segment. I saw it first. Sir, do you want to go first, or shall I name drop mine?
Oh, please. I defer to the name drop.
Okay. So I mentioned the New Japan show, and I said there's one match that has to be seen that you would think is one of the most unbelievable greatest matches. Well, maybe not greatest, but very good. It is from 1981. Stan Hansen versus Andre the Giant.
Oh!
And Stan Hansen is not carrying Andre the Giant. If you've never seen a good Andre the Giant match, go to YouTube and watch it. Andre the Giant is, I'm going to say jumping around, but he's way more mobile than he'd be in later years. He's doing splashes. He's getting knocked out of the ring. He's moving. Stan Hansen is going at a very fast pace, and Andre the Giant is keeping up with him. It's in Japan, so you get a different crowd vibe. The fans are into them because, you know, the Japanese people, they're smaller people. So you got Andre the Giant, the quote-unquote 7'5", eighth wonder of the world. He was really about 6'9", 6'10". And you got Stan Hansen, who's about 6'4". These two giants just throwing punches at each other. And, you know, Stan Hansen, he's known for potatoing, which is, you know, letting that punch connect.
He'll catch you if you're not paying attention. You will get caught.
Yeah. But the thing is, you can tell he was careful. Because Stan Hansen's a tough guy, but you're still in the ring with a giant. Do you have to see this match? The best part is there's a segment in there where Stan Hansen, he goes off the ropes. Andre puts his head down for a back body drop. Stan Hansen kicks him in the face. And then Andre's stunned, and Stan Hansen calmly walks over, picks up Andre the Giant, and body slams him. The crowd loses their fucking mind. The other thing you have to realize is Stan Hansen's finishing move is the lariat. We call it the clothesline over here. So when it connects again, the crowd loses their fucking mind. And the thing is that this, to me, I enjoyed this match a lot. It was very exciting. It was heated. But they're not doing shit. They're not doing like three moonsaults and a powerbomb and these intricate spin you around into a modified rock bottom. None of that stuff. But they're doing basic stuff like a bear hug. They worked the arm. They did a headlock. They're just pounding the crap out of each other. And I'm glued to this match. Watch it.
These guys know how to work, man. You know? Lost they know art. How to work. Lost art. Everybody's got to do the high spots now.
They didn't do. There was two high spots. Two. And one of them was a body slam. Think about that.
Wow.
Yes. That was a high spot in the match.
Well, I found that match. I'm downloading it as we speak. But I'll keep mine in the area of Japan, the land of the rising sun. This was 1980. Dusty Rhodes challenging the new WWF champion, Bob Backlund, in Japan. This was a match between two baby faces. I saw it in the magazines back here. Obviously, I'm like, whoa, would love to have seen that. I found it on YouTube. It was a stiff, scientific match, but Dusty being Dusty, things got a little rough. He fell outside the ring. Somehow, Backlund breathed on him, gets busted open, and then it's on. You know, after the match ended, you know, I think it was a count out, but they get into it, and they're both busted open. I'm like, all right.
And it was so good to see that because at the time, you never saw face matches, ever. And I guess the promoters in New Japan wrote that check, and Backlund brought his WWF title over, and Dusty said, look, let me get a shot. And he gave him a shot. And I do have that, well, let me rephrase that, that match is available on YouTube. If you're looking for it, it is there to find.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned it went to a double count out. If you like me are just so pissed off at the WWE product with so many disqualifications, Japan from 1975 to 1989 was far worse. They would have, it'd be a main event match. For example, it could be Hulk Hogan versus Stan Hansen or Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. That's the main event. You are not getting a pinfall. It's either going to be a DQ, double DQ, a count out, or a double count. Because they did not beat their top guys. Only rarely did you see any of them do a pinfall loss, a clean pinfall loss, which is, thank God, we can get into this later, but there was a, what they were called, it was called UWF, which is more of a shoot style.
UWFI, yes.
But no, this is just UWF before.
Oh, okay, before that.
And they gave you a conclusive winner. It was either submission or knockout. And they were just selling out, making a ton of money. And All Japan and New Japan, they looked at that and was like, fuck, we got to give them clean wins. And thankfully, it's been nothing but clean wins since then, in the main events at least.
You know, as much as I enjoy Japanese wrestling and especially watching old Dynamite Kid footage, did he ever get a chance to go over clean?
No. No.
Jeez.
Not to Tiger Mask. Nope.
Not to Tiger Mask. No way.
Tiger Mask never lost. Never lost.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Tiger Mask was great, but Dynamite Kid should have got a run, man.
Yeah. See, you just don't understand the business.
Well, I know. I'm still learning. You know.
Tiger Mask was the goose.
Yeah, that's true.
He was the goose, and they're like, no, we're not. And the thing is, and that's the difference between, that's the difference between current WWE US style and Japan, even to this day. It's like, and what I really liked is, like, your top guys don't job. And when they do, it's meaningful. People will laugh at John Cena never losing to Cesaro for, like, 3 years. Try 6 years in Japan. There was this one wrestler, Jun Akiyama. He came in 1993, I believe. He didn't get his Budokan near main event pinfall win over a top guy, that being Mitsuharu Misawa, till 2000.
Well, but he was a young boy, wasn't he? So you gotta pay your dues, man.
But I'm just saying, 7 years. So people mad about Cesaro and John Cena. Yeah, try seven.
And is it, speaking of Cesaro, does it look like his push has been, like, just gone now? It's derailed?
Well, here's breaking news, nigga, breaking news. believe it or not, the week before, the week of Hell in a Cell, he did an interview, and he said they were talking, and he mentioned that he's tired of seeing Randy Orton versus John Cena for the 1,000th time.
So am I.
Yeah, well, you don't work for the WWE now, do you?
No, that's true.
And yeah, they didn't like that, and he's been paying for it ever since.
Oh yeah, he shot his mouth off.
If you're gonna shoot your mouth off, you gotta be in a position where they can't kill you.
Yep.
Well, that's been our show, and as we like to do at podcastjuice.net, Big Sexy, tell them where you have to find me.
I can be found on Facebook under my civilian identity, my secret identity of Mark Wiggins, and on Twitter under Big Sexy, my preferred identity, Big Sexy and Sack.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at @Pooh. I like to do a lot of the commentary about wrestling and the comic book shows. Like right now, I'm watching Walking Dead in my picture-in-picture.
And don't tell me what happens. I'm recording it.
Nothing's happened so far. It's been a lot of talk. And you can see me on 401 Mania, where I have a comic book themed column, and at knockoutnation.com, where I do my weekly wrestling column, Breaking Kayfabe. Thank you for listening, and talk with you guys later.